Hi, this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome Chris Botti. This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and we are very pleased to be welcoming by phone Chris Botti. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well, thanks.
Thank you so much for making time to be a guest on the program. What I forgot to ask you as we were kind of doing our introductions before we started the interview is, where are you calling from today?
I'm in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
Kind of a, we have a very rare kind of a couple weeks off. For the last 10 years, we've been out on the road about 300 days a year. And all of a sudden, we have like 3 weeks off, 2 or 3 weeks off. I don't know what to do with myself. So here I am at home talking to you. It's good.
Well, great. Well, I'm going to get back in a second here to that 300 dates a year touring schedule of yours. Chris, of course, will be no stranger to our listeners. The Grammy Award winner for Best Pop Album recently for Impressions, his most recent recording. And four of his albums have reached number one on the Billboard charts. In addition to his 10 recordings under his own name, and his extensive touring over a few decades at this point. His collaborations include work with literally a who's who of the music industry: Paul Simon, Frank Sinatra, Sting, Gladys Knight, John Mayer, Aretha Franklin, Yo-Yo Ma, Steven Tyler, Roger Daltrey, Joni Mitchell. I just like saying all those names together, let alone trying to play music with them. Chris is originally from the Northwest, not too far away from us here in Montana, at least by Montana standards, having been born in Portland and raised in Corvallis, Oregon specifically. And Chris, I guess I just wanted to start there with that beginning in the Northwest and ask, was there anything specifically about growing up in that area that you think kind of formed you as a musician?
There's not a lot to do. I mean that in a very positive way. I mean, when I look back and think about my career, I'm just very grateful that I lived in a place that once I decided and put my mind to it, that it gave me the kind of ability to have the freedom to practice a lot. Hmm. You know, I mean, I think sometimes kids, they go at a very early age to Juilliard and they're kind of worried about, you know, the subway and paying the rent and doing all that, and it can knock you out of that focus. Oregon, is a perfect kind of focus for me as a young person to do something positive with my life.
I'd wondered if perhaps, all joking aside, the climate might have something to do with that. The amount of time, the amount of rain and the kind of the damp weather, if that, you know, kept a young musician inside, had, you know, again, looking for things to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've been always a very driven person my whole life. And, in a hit like a light bulb. I mean, I remember watching the Johnny Carson show and seeing Doc Severinsen on television and saying to myself, you know, I'd like to try playing the trumpet. You know, I was fairly young when I started third grade. And by the time I was 12, when I heard Miles Davis for the first time, it really, really, really resonated with me. I mean, I thought to myself, I want to be a trumpet player. I didn't think about, you know, necessarily how a career would unfold. But I really want, my connection to the instrument became so strong when I heard Miles Davis, the sound of his trumpet. And yes, it's melancholy, and that works great with the kind of nature of Oregon being kind of moody and gloomy and all the time. But it really made me feel that I had found my calling.
Chris, there was a specific tune and a specific album of Miles Davis that really drew you in.
The album's called My Funny Valentine, and it had cool picture of Miles in the front. And, you know, you put this introduction, and the introduction played beautifully by Herbie Hancock. And up comes Miles, the sound. It was a live recording, obviously. And it was just, wow, I just couldn't imagine anything more pretty or heartbreaking in a way. Mm-hmm. And in the weirdest sort of twist of fate, 2 years ago, I was invited to the White House to perform for four presidents, the then sitting president of China, and then the Carters and the Obamas and the Clintons, and then a bunch of other, like, celebrity, you know, Barbara Streisand was in the audience, etc. And the White House requested that Herbie Hancock and I play My Funny Valentine, you know. And
so there you are playing with the guy that put it on the map for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you grew up in your house listening to the Beatles and all of a sudden you were, you know, a member of the Beatles or something. I mean, it was just a weird kind of 5-minute kind of make my head kind of go around. And it was really fun to play for the politicians, of course, but the reason that I was so excited mainly was to play that thing with Herbie and kind of relive that experience from so long ago.
Thank you.
Chris, we talked about your collaborations, which is obviously something that you're very well known for. Let's drop the name of Mark Knopfler and add Vince Gill, Herbie Hancock, you mentioned before, Andrea Bocelli. And I don't say that just to list off another, well, partly I do, to list off all these folks that you've played with. But what I want to get to is this question. What do you feel that you bring to the table as a musician that all of these artists respond to and make them want to work with you? There's obviously something.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty remarkable list, my
early,
friend.
Early on, I was the jazz guy that these guys like to work with. I mean, you'd be surprised. There are a lot of, I think, in a lot of respects, jazz musicians do a lot to hurt themselves. Shooting themselves in the proverbial foot would be an example I would give you. They isolate themselves, and they're not really open, or they don't really have a lot of passion for popular music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love sophisticated popular music, pop music, whatever you call that. You know, Sting, Paul Simon, mm-hmm. blah, 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 Joni Mitchell, Andrea Bocelli, all that stuff. I really love it. So when I'm coming up through the ranks and playing with these musicians and have a deep kind of knowledge of what goes on, it's unique because mm-hmm. most trumpet players are, you know, their love ends at Clifford Brown and Miles Davis, and then they don't really want to get into pop music necessarily. So I became the jazz guy that a lot of these popular musicians would use. And then once I started my solo career, I think that word gets out in musicians quite quickly. I mean, long before I was well known to the general public, I was very, very well known amongst musicians because they talk quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so
true.
I think word gets out amongst musicians that when they guest on our records or on our TV specials or whatever, that they're going to be treated in an unbelievably highly musical fashion.
Mm.
They're going to have great arrangements. The audio is going to be incredibly flattering to them, which, believe me, is a stressful thing for a lot of these guys, you know?
Yeah.
And they know they're going to be put in a situation musically that frames their voice, is interesting, and just not the normal thing they do. And everyone's been very, very happy. I mean, I think Bocelli and I have probably now collaborated and worked like 10 things together. And
mm-hmm.
And that just comes out of left field, you know, and to be able to like say he's my friend is just a really, really cool thing.
Chris, among all these folks that you've collaborated, I know that Sting has been particularly a fruitful collaboration on a number of levels. And I wondered if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he became so much more than a collaboration. You know, he's my brother in so many ways. And but I was in London in 1990, beginning of 1999. We'd just known each other fairly socially, and I'd done a couple of his Rainforest Benefit concerts. And I rang him up, and he said, "Listen, I want to take you out for a drink at the." And there's a very famous, iconic hotel called the Dorchester, right on Hyde Park. Every time I go by that hotel, I always think about this crazy night. And we rolled into the bar there, and he said, I have a proposition for you. I want you to join my band. It's going to be a long tour, 2.5 years. And I know you're known by a lot of musicians, and I'd released 4 records by then, one of which he'd sang on. And he goes, if you join my band, I promise you I'll break the sound of your trumpet to the whole world. Most of them aren't jazz fans, but they will remain your fans for your entire career.
Hmm.
And it just seemed like the most natural thing. And from that we became unbelievably close friends, and every kind of twist and turn that's happened positively for me in my career is linked back to him. Like, for instance, maybe Live in Boston is one of my biggest successes. That doesn't happen without me calling up, you know, if I call up Steven Tyler and say, "Hey, Sting's on board along with the Boston Symphony, and it's in your hometown," it's a yes.
Yeah.
You know? And all those other things happen. You know, Sting fired me from his band with a wink and said, "Now I want you to be my opening act throughout the world. Now it's your time to step in front of the stage and do it."
Mm.
And someone in that audience in New York was like, my friend Oprah Winfrey would love this guy. And 2 weeks later, we were on the Oprah show. You know what I mean? Like, everything sort of leads back to his blessing or his belief or his enthusiasm for me as a trumpet player to be much more than just a trumpet player.
she wrote a kind of ultimatum note. She gave to me, she gave to me. And when I thought the field had cleared, it seems another suit appeared to challenge me. Oh, woe is me. And though I hate to make a choice, my options are decreasing mostly rapidly. Well, we'll see. I don't think she bluffed this time. I really have to make her mine. It's plain to see. It's him or me. Monday, I could wait till Tuesday if I make up my mind. Wednesday. Six feet ten might instill fear in other men, but not in me. The mighty flea. Ask if I am mouse or man. The mirror squeaked the way I ran. He'll murder me in time for his tea. Does it bother me at all? My rival is Neanderthal. It makes me think, perhaps I need a drink. IQ's not an issue here. We won't be playing Scrabble for her hand, I feel. I need that beer.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musician's Spotlight. We're speaking today by phone with Chris Botti, calling us from Los Angeles. Chris, I mentioned earlier that I wanted to get back to this 300-night-a-year touring schedule. I've done the show for 16 years. I've talked to hundreds of musicians, and I've seen a lot of touring schedules. I don't know if I've seen one quite like yours. So my question, and I feel like I ask this to a lot of musicians, but it's always endlessly interesting to me. Where do you find time to breathe? And when you do, what do you do maybe outside of music that helps you breathe and kind of just take stock of yourself as a person?
I'm not the best at it, to be honest with you. And I'm, I, I work so much, you know, when it's 300 days on the road, like for instance, I mean, you know, we have a run coming up where we leave like Victoria, British Columbia, get on a plane, fly to Sao Paulo, Brazil, then play Rio, then come home, then we go to Seoul, Korea for a day, and then Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, my heavens.
You know, I really want to not allow my garden or my craft to go away. And I've seen so many other young artists have success in their 20s, and then they think, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, the road's too difficult, I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to get, I'm going to take a break, and then their audience leaves them. But I look at a guy like Sting, and having been so close to him, being so close to him, see how he acted to me as a role model to have an appetite for touring, to be constantly touring. Now, a lot of times we're doing concerts with, you know, Beijing Symphony, that's part of the Beijing Music Festival, and it's set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like a band like U2, they can do all of Asia, and they can go boom, 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 right around all of Asia. But we're kind of beholden to things that are out of our control sometimes, so it makes it really, really hard on you physically. And when I do get some time off, I admit to you, I'm not great at it. I try to do my yoga, or I kind of zone out playing chess and try to stay in good condition. But it's you know, it can kind of like fragment your life, you know, because you've given your life to this touring, and then you go bang, and you walk into your house, and it's it's like crickets. You know, is anyone here? Like, what's going on? I don't have a dog or a plant, and it's hard to keep a relationship together. That's the reality of the downer side of being a working musician in the way I do it.
Chris, again, in doing my research, a quote that I came across, it just spoke to the journey that you've had, you know, growing up in Corvallis, the Oregon area, to where you are now. Just the idea of never losing the fact that at some point you were a kid that just wanted to be in the band, as in the school band, then wanting to be first chair, to the point where, you know, the first moment where you actually realized, hey, I can sell a concert ticket. Can you speak a little bit about that and just kind of keeping that young Chris Botti, you know, never losing track of him in this whole journey that you're on?
Well, it's probably the most difficult thing to tell a young person, and that is you have to be incredibly passionate about each little step. Because if I said to a kid, hey, you could have a career like me and travel around the world and play concerts and be famous or whatever that is, they might say, yeah, I'll do that. But if you say to the kid, no, there's no guarantee of that, you have to really feel like the gig tomorrow night at a wedding in some terrible area of New York City, but you got a good compliment from a musician you respected, that is the Grammy Award. That's what you're looking for. I remember the very first month in New York, you know, I did every terrible job. I mean, I played on the streets in New York at Christmas time, out playing Christmas carols, and you know, when we made $18 one time between the four of us, I thought I'd won the Academy Award, you know, or something like that. And all of those other players went on to be very, very well known. Well, three of them all joined the Rolling Stones and were the Rolling Stones horn section. You know, so we were young and really good musicians trying to do stuff. And I didn't really think about the long picture. I just thought about, you know, how am I going to impress, or how am I going to get better, or how am I going to, you know, relate to musicians that I respect more often. And then little by little, you know, Lego block by Lego block, you build upon something and you think, boy, could I actually have a shot at getting a record deal? I mean, that seemed so foreign to me for a long time. I got that, and then I could actually have a fan. I could actually have music that somehow is, it would move people's emotions. You know, because it's one thing to be a good player, but to try to get, you know, conceptually a format, a thing, a sound, an imprint that makes people's emotions move, then that's a totally different thing. And but if you go from point Z, and you can't go from point A to point Z too quick. You got to go A, B, C, D, you know, it's like every step of the way, step by step.
ChrisBoti.com is the name of Chris's website. And just to make sure, I'll spell Chris's full name, ChrisBotti, ChrisBoti.com. You can find out all kinds of information about what's going on in his world. And as we have found out in this interview, there's never a shortage of all kinds of stuff going on in the world of Chris Boti. So thank you so much for making time to call us from Los Angeles and be a guest here on Musician Spotlight.
Well, I sure enjoyed the talk. You're incredibly knowledgeable, and I had a lot of fun.
Thank you, Chris. This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been Chris Boti. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us through our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as through Facebook. Our program is now available as a download from those websites as well as from iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.